The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
When the Facts Change is brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, in partnership with KiwiBank, the bank for Kiwi looking to get ahead in business and in life, a bank that delivers expertise and banking know-how, smart advice for business owners wanting to invest, grow their business, or diversify, a bank that adapts with technology through the lens of its people and customers. It is a bank with heart that is driven by its purpose, Kiwi making Kiwi better off. When I was a kid, I used to go down the neighbour's place to stand underneath the huge power pylons that went across their farm. And I used to listen. I used to listen to the hum, especially when it was slightly rainy, but drizzly, you'd hear the hum and the crackle of the electricity going through the lines. I thought it was fascinating. I wasn't thinking too much about what it meant for my health, but I certainly was fascinated by the idea of all this power crackling its way up, as it turned out, to Auckland. I wasn't sure whether it had come all the way from the bottom of the South Island, but I knew that it was part of our grid. And actually, when I was a kid, it was quite a big thing. And it's gotten bigger since, as more of these huge pylons and huge lines have snaked across the country. We're going to need a lot more too, as we electrify our economy and put all of our cars into batteries. We're going to have to move so much of our electricity to new factories and things that replace coal boilers. We're going to need a lot of electricity flying all over the place, humming and crackling. This week on When the Facts Change, I speak to John Clark. He's the Executive General Manager for Future Grid at Transpower, who are doing something unusual and interesting. A few weeks ago, Transpower announced, relatively quietly, something that I think is the beginning of a major change in the way we think about energy use. In the past, whenever we needed more energy, we just built more generation and we built bigger lines to go crackle and hum. But what if, as we need more energy, we find ways to reduce demand rather than simply increase supply? Now, at the moment, New Zealand has this slightly imbalanced way of handling electricity. It's mostly generated, or at least the spare stuff is, down the bottom of the South Island in Manapouri and along all of those big rivers. Some of it goes to Tiwai Point, and it looks like it's going to keep going to Tiwai Point, but a lot of it needs to move north, either north to the top of the South Island or across the Cook Strait and up into the North Island, where most of our people live and where most of our growth is happening. So Transpower can look ahead and see that we're going to need to electrify the economy and move a lot more electricity around. And that's expensive. Those huge pylons cost enormous amounts of money. And of course, it's hard to get consents and agreement to put your pylons across that land now. They're not quite as popular as when I was a kid. And that means Transpower is looking at a different way of managing this growth in demand and the need for new generation. It has announced that it plans to do requests for proposals, ask for bids from people to reduce peak electricity demand in the coming 6 years or so, and by quite a lot, up to 150 megawatts. And they want this in place by 2029 at the top of the South Island. There's lots of ways that demand can be managed. You can use batteries, you can use water heaters or networks of water heaters, which you turn down. There's a lot of ways to do this. Different ways to manage that electrification and the need to get all that hum and crackle in all the right places. Look out this week for an electrifying episode of When the Facts Change. Well, kia ora, and welcome to When the Facts Change to John Clark, who is the Executive General Manager for Grid Development at Transpower. John, you put out an announcement, a request for people to come to you about something fascinating. Can you tell us what was in that announcement?
Kia ora, Bernard, and all your listeners. We're looking at an alternative way rather than adding more capacity to the existing electricity transmission grid to help meet the increasing need for electricity in what we call the upper part of the South Island, from Timaru, Christchurch, Nelson, all the way through. We've been doing some really good work in that region, which doesn't have much generation. It has a couple of small hydro schemes and other things, but it's largely dependent on getting its bulk electricity from those big power stations down in the Waitaki Valley. So over the years, over the last 20 years, we've done a lot to try and eke out more from the existing transmission lines into the region as the electricity use has grown. We're probably getting 50% more power for those lines, but we're fast reaching the point we might have to build a whole new line. And we know that's expensive. We know that takes time. And we also know that the electricity grid is not just about supplying bulk electricity. Today, more and more consumers, electricity users, have ways of generating their own electricity. You know, some domestic users may have solar panels, they may even have a battery with it. It's great. Some of the big commercial units users may have solar panels on their roofs or ways that they can store some of their process heat that they make for a time when they can recharge that with electricity at another time rather than at peak times. But challenge we face with electricity networks is pretty much like a busy road. There's only certain times of the day when it's really congested. So as we sort of start to get towards the point where we might need new line into our Upper South Island, what more can we do to spread the load on the existing grid by harnessing what we call flexibility services or distributed energy resources? There's lots of names. And what we've done is we've gone out and said, here, you know, here's an invitation to come to us with different ideas. Now, those ideas could be a whole range of different technologies. You know, one that comes to mind and is very popular overseas at the moment are what we call grid-scale batteries. Right? So around Christchurch, we're getting proposals to develop solar farms, which is great. But, of course, you only get electricity out of your solar farm when the sun shines. And Christchurch, having grown up there, gets cold at night and there's no sun. So what if you had a very large battery somewhere near Christchurch that was taking some of that energy from the sun during the day and pumping it out at night when the grid is under stress trying to supply all those heat pumps and heaters up through the South Island? So we're interested in proposals like that. We're interested in what some people call a virtual power plant, right? So, you know, because people reducing electricity use is much the same as having a generator that supplies electricity one within that region. So, you know, there are people out there we know who offer a service to people. We'll have a battery and a solar panel in your house, but we'll manage your electricity use. And by harnessing all those individual small households, they've effectively created their own power plant. So they could operate that power plant in a way that where they get messages from us that the grid's getting under stress, perhaps in the middle of summer during irrigation or in a cold night, to manage how the solar and batteries in someone's home is managed. It even, in some cases, goes as far as managing their appliances. And surprisingly, people, you know, if they don't get any significant interruption in service in their home, they're actually happy if their dishwasher or their dryer runs at a different time, especially if, from an affordability point of view, it reduces their power bills.
And a lot of people have got hot water heaters, which can be turned on or off if necessary to reduce demand on the network. Ripple control is one of those tools. Could you tell us a bit about that?
The use of hot water cylinders in our home, bit of a history story here really, has been something that's been a feature of New Zealand for a very long time. Probably goes back to World War II, post-World War II, when wasn't so much the transmission and distribution networks were under stress, we just didn't have enough electricity power stations to generate electricity. So it became the practice to have a cylinder in everyone's house where the hot water is stored. You can turn supply off for two, three, four, 5 hours, turn it back on again, and most people have hot water. At least they have a householder full of teenagers or something that all decide to shower at once. So that resource has actually been there for a very, very long time, and local distribution companies have often switched and controlled it to actually take the pressure off the grid. Interestingly, in the Upper South Island, the local distribution companies there under Orion actually brought that resource together under a single controller, probably about, well, with our support, probably about 10 to 15 years ago. So that has been something that has been used to take some of the pressure off the grid up until now. And certainly that can form part of what we're looking to do for the Upper South Island.
So what I found fascinating about this announcement, John, was that Transpower was actually going out there to say, we're interested in buying, to start with, 63 megawatts of reduced electricity demand at peak times, and that over time it would be happy to pay to reduce electricity demand to 150 megawatts by 2031. Can you give us this, give our listeners a sense of why it's important for Transpower to reduce demand for electricity at peak times? Because this issue of having to build your network for the peak, not necessarily the average, is one of the sort of banes of the lives of electricity network builders. So can you talk about that idea of reducing demand for electricity and why it actually makes sense sometimes to pay for that?
Paying for reducing demand is the alternative to investing in more transmission capacity. So here we face, if we want to get more out of the existing grid into the Upper South Island, we face spending around $180 to $100 million as the next incremental step, which will probably get us in the 2030s. By that time, as I said earlier, we've been working on the existing grid for a long time, 20 years to get more out of it. That time, sometime in the mid-2030s, we're going to have to build a whole new line, right? And that's in the early billions of dollars. So being able to push that investment out reduces the shock and cost that will come on people's power bills when we do that kind of upgrade. So it's actually in our interest, and it works under our arrangements with the Commerce Commission, that instead of spending that much money, say $100 million up front, if we were to spend, and again, this is just examples, $2 to $3 million a year paying people to reduce their demand at peak times, which is when the grid has reached its limit, then we're actually all better off. So it's a good outcome for us. It's a good outcome for consumers. Another reason to do it is it actually takes time to build transmission assets. So not only is it a good thing in deferring when you might need to build significant new transmission lines or even upgrade existing ones, which is our first step here, it's also a good insurance mechanism to make sure we can continue to keep the lights on if we struggle to build those projects.
Yes, and not to mention the resource consenting time. Just to step back a bit, John, and try to understand the scale of the challenge here, because if New Zealand's going to get to carbon zero by 2050, and in fact the whole of the world is going to, you know, reduce its carbon emissions, there needs to be an awful lot of electrification of stuff which is currently done using engines, petrol and diesel engines. So could you give us a sense of the scale of the issue here in terms of how much extra electricity we're going to have to use, where we're going to use it, and how we're going to use it? Because, you know, I have this vision of everyone at once buying electric cars and everyone plugging it into their house at 6 o'clock at night when they arrive home, and a whole bunch of substations going bang. So can you give us a sense of, you know, the scale in the next 20, 30 years of how much extra electricity and how much work has to be done?
Bernard, there's been a number of reports that have looked at what happens when you electrify vehicles or transport, and what happens if you electrify what we call process heat, which is those big industrial factories that are creating hot water or steam from gas and coal today. Those two, what we call easier to electrify areas, in most studies show that we use about 60% more electricity than we do today by 2050. And that's not thinking about the harder areas such as air travel or marine, which also, if we had to make those fuels with electricity, would add to the amount we need. So certainly some mind-boggling numbers there. Some work done by an industry group called The Future is Electric established as a rough order of magnitude that we'd need to spend about $8 to $10 billion on the electricity transmission grid by 2050 and about $22 billion, I think if I've got my facts right, in the electricity distribution businesses. So that's pretty significant investment and pretty significant incentive to find ways, as well as having to build some of that infrastructure, to better utilise the resources in people's networks, in their homes, such as vehicles and solar, and perhaps manage people's electricity demand as well to take the stress off the network. There certainly are concerns that if this is not well coordinated, there could be added stresses on distribution networks or grids at the wrong time. So there's a lot of work going on about how these distributed energy resources are best managed. Fortunately, most of the electricity retailers and others that are offering special rates to charge your EV or something like that already have time control, if you like, of when they charge your vehicle. So that scenario of 6:30 at night, you know, instead of lights staying on, the lights go out because the EVs are charged, is less likely. But we will need to build and work collectively as an electricity industry on how we manage a lot more things happening in distribution networks. We sort of say, you know, today's electricity networks and supply, if you like, is very much remote generation through transmission, distribution to the end consumer. The future electricity grid becomes a lot more distributed and a lot more dynamic. So there are a number of working groups with regulators, with industry bodies, just thinking through as we electrify and become more dependent not only on what we call grid-scale transmission and generation, but also distributed resources to help balance the pressure on the system overall. How's that all coordinated properly?
When the Facts Change is brought to you in partnership with KiwiBank to help you understand the issues affecting the economy. And that's what their team of experts is here to do too. Here's KiwiBank's chief economist, Jared Kerr, on what's happening with inflation in 2024.
Globally, inflation rose to really high levels. We saw inflation averaging over 10% last year. Now central banks have reacted. They've tightened monetary policy. They've lifted interest rates to levels where it hurts. We've seen growth slow down and we're seeing inflation coming off, which is great news because we import a lot of inflation from the rest of the world, and that imported inflation is easing. So half the job that we're trying to do locally is being done for us offshore. The other half, the domestic bit, well, that's the tough bit. That's the sticky inflation that's coming out of our housing market. It's coming out of construction. It's coming out of service industries, and it's going to be hard to contain.
Visit kiwibank.co.nz to stay up to date with detailed economic analysis and forecasts from Jared and other KiwiBank experts. They take big issues from both here and overseas and make them relevant to Kiwi businesses.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
One of the debates over the years about particularly solar and also wind was that it was so variable that you couldn't really rely on it, particularly, you know, in the middle of the night or in the winter or when there wasn't much wind. However, one of the big changes of the last, you know, decade or so is the very fast drop in the cost of batteries and also the realization in a way that whenever you're, particularly with transport, using an electric vehicle, you actually have a battery with you that can become part of the solution for this variability. Could you give us a sense of how the change in battery technologies and costs makes demand management more of a realistic and viable option that maybe, you know, 10, 20 years ago, we didn't think it was a thing?
Yeah, Bernard, certainly at many or three key levels, batteries have started to play a much stronger role. At the, I guess, the big end of town, at the grid scale, we'll see, particularly in Australia and other places, they are installing very large batteries. There's one battery in Australia that plugs into the grid to take pressure off the grid if a grid line disconnects suddenly and can inject a lot of power into the grid. It's equivalent to 10% of the total electricity demand we're using at any minute in winter in New Zealand.
Wow.
Now, one of our generator retailers is installing a smaller but similar battery up near Marsden Point. Another one of our lines companies in the Waikato has installed a smaller battery as well. So we're already getting, coming into the grid, if you like, what we call grid-scale batteries that can help take the pressure off the transmission system. They can also reduce costs in our wholesale electricity market. So when prices are high because we're having to run really expensive generators, they can actually come in and make sure we're relying on a lower cost combination of generators, which is also really great. Stepping down a little bit further, the next role for batteries is obviously within people's homes. So a lot of people do install solar, and as you said, solar and wind are only around when either the sun's shining or the wind's blowing. But the combination of solar in someone's home and the fact they may have an agreement also to have a battery in their home means that collectively their electricity use can be managed, including sending a signal to the battery when the grid's under pressure to increase its output. As I said before, that has to be nicely coordinated so it doesn't create too much stress between the local distribution network and the grid. But if it is, that's an important role. And then you're right, the last point you were talking about, of course, we've got these vehicles running around that have got batteries in them. So as well or separately to having a battery already installed fixed at your home, you arguably have a battery sitting in your garage in your EV that can be used. And most EV manufacturers allow an EV's battery now not only to be charged from the house, but also to feed power back in.
Yeah, that will be an interesting change when those most of the cars that are sold are two-way, if you like. That will create a whole bunch of little batteries all over the country running around. And just finally, I wanted to get a sense of the economics of it, because you paint a really interesting picture where, particularly with wholesale power, there is the opportunity for someone to build a grid-scale battery system. And there's a point where the cost of building the batteries becomes cheaper than the price of the wholesale. And so you can actually start to arbitrage, you know, start to use the low cost of the batteries to actually maybe drag down or lower the average price for wholesale power. Are we there yet? You know, is the economics of batteries and solar down to the point where it's starting to, you know, make sense to sort of become a trader in the wholesale markets?
I think we are still on that journey at the moment. We're certainly seeing some people, remember I talked about the virtual power plant, collectively gathering up a number of homes and batteries together to operate them in unison. And because something called an aggregator is running those, they've got the ability not only to make those batteries relieve tension off the grid, but also, as you say, if we're having to run really expensive generation, perhaps say gas or oil fired at peak times, they can be used, they can also offer their battery not only as a transmission alternative to us, they can also offer it into the electricity market to help reduce spot prices. And obviously that aggregator captures the value from offering the battery to Transpower, captures the value from offering it into the wholesale market where there's a range of things it can do. And that's part of their commercial proposition back to whichever number of householders they've harnessed these resources from to lower their bills overall.
And one of the interesting things about this announcement from Transpower this week is that it also opens up the idea that there could be a whole bunch of new players who effectively become part of the electricity system who weren't there before. So when I think of the electricity system now, I think of the Gentailers, yes. You know, the big, the Meridians, the Mercuries, the Genesis and Contact, along with some smaller generators who were also retailers. So they've got a big dam or a big power plant or some windmills or whatever it is, and they have a brand and they're selling their power to consumers. And they're usually very big and have big balance sheets and big cash flows and lots of happy shareholders. And then we've got the lines companies. So these are the often quite local, sometimes owned by community trusts or councils. And they are restricted. They can't actually sell power directly to consumers. What they do is charge a fee to the consumer as a monopoly that is passing power from Transpower to consumers. And that's one of the areas of tension, I suppose, in the debate about the future of the electricity system is whether those electricity lines companies can also become retailers, because at the moment they're not allowed to. And then there's Transpower itself. So you've got three main players. But it seems to me with this idea of demand management, of effectively buying a reduction in demand, that you could open up a whole group of new, in a way, suppliers and providers to the electricity industry. Maybe it's a collection of schools that are able to have batteries and they effectively sell their demand management to Transpower. Or maybe it's a bunch of car manufacturers. Maybe one of the big car manufacturers that's selling, you know, 10,000 electric vehicles a month into the market can say to Transpower, well, I can organize all of my car owners to provide the demand reduction that you need at 6 o'clock at night or at 7 o'clock in the morning or whenever you want. It seems to me this opens up the potential for a lot more players to become involved in helping to solve this problem of, you know, massively increasing our use of electricity.
Yes, it does. And there's already players emerging who do that. Not quite in the way you mentioned about schools or that, but certainly, as it's called, them aggregators, who there's certainly one party who's very active in offering solar and batteries to people's homes and has harnessed that together and demonstrated to us, I think, last winter in the electricity market that they could contribute 30 megawatts, which is about 2% of our peak electricity needs on a cold night, from the collection of harnessing together all the solars and batteries. So scaling that up, if we get more EVs, as we no doubt will do, and other resources out there, yes, they're definitely new sources, and there'll probably be a market. Some of those players, schools and that, might not necessarily want to be dealing themselves, but they'll certainly be looking for new parties to deal through in order to make the most of the investment they're making in distributed resources as part of having a more distributed and dynamic power system overall.
John Clark, the Executive General Manager for Grid Development at Transpower, thank you so much for being on When the Facts Change.
Thank you, Bruno.
When the Facts Change was brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, together with KiwiBank. Visit kiwibank.co.nz to find out how KiwiBank are making Kiwi better off.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.